There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you? Direct connection to the famous spacecraft crash of 1947, because it wasn't a crash. We sent for them. Well, not we like me and you. It was the CIA, of course. They didn't crash. They were just witnessed. What I'm saying is space assassins. And why did we send for them? That's right, JFK. See, they had to acclimate to our atmosphere, get used to our gravity and all that, but they were perfectly placed to take the shot in 1963. And once they were paid and on their way, there was no way to trace them. It was perfect. Except, of course, that someone leaked the information. It had to be reassembled from thousands of phone bills. You know, those random charges? Well, they were a code, Max. That guy, Captain Crunch, he wasn't just a phone freak. He broke the code. That's why they had to off him, too. Sure, they let him write a few articles for 2400, but once his name was out, the jig was up. But before he disappeared, he got the message out. If you take the first word of every episode of Scooby-Doo from the 1969 season, it's a roadmap to where the information was hidden. And 1969, that's an interesting year, isn't it? You think it's coincidence that Scooby-Doo premiered the same year that we supposedly landed on the moon? Think about it. Sure, you can shrug that off, but what you can't shrug off is another episode of Max Mike Movies. We're no conspiracy, we're the real thing. The series, this is a good place for a stick-up. The movie, Sneakers, a 1992 heist film, kinda, with an all-star cast. You know what else has an all-star cast? Us! That star over there is none other than Max Cows are fake. Levine, move for me, Max.
Never. That's what they want. We're trying to eliminate their form of communication.
Don't say eliminate.
I will bleat for you.
Well done, Max. That frequency also activates. Never mind. And I am none other than Mike Luke Shot First Loose. Before we get to Sneakers, we're going to get to you.
Poll question.
Last week, we asked what crime that hasn't had a film made of it yet deserves one. We got some really interesting answers. Bill O'Lading, Max.
Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading.
Thanks. He wrote us, quote, Judge Crater, call your office. The still unexplained 1930 disappearance of drug...
Oh, no, wait. I remember it. Judge Crater. He was there with, like, Mike Nomad, and he was one of the daily comic strips. Yeah.
No, different Judge Crater.
Oh, sorry.
Anyway, the still unexplained 1930 disappearance of Judge Crater deserves a movie. The judge was as mobbed up as they come. Then, one day, he withdrew a lot of cash out of the bank and sent his clerk home early. He ran into some friends unexpectedly and shared a dinner where they reported he was acting strangely. And then he tipped his hat, stepped out into the dark Manhattan street, and disappeared forever. The investigation of the disappearance and the exploration of the Depression-era New York would be an exquisite romp, a la the Black Dahlia. A bold directorial choice would be to just leave it unresolved, no theory of their own to propose. Ooh. Runner-up would be the 1990 Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum heist, still unexplained. Make it an Ocean Eleven-type heist, only with hopelessly clumsy thieves who somehow get away with it. I'd watch. I'd so watch. End quote. Wow. As for that first one, it sounds really interesting. I don't know anything about Judge Crater, do you?
No, I've never heard. Like I said, I thought I'm actually mixing him up with Judge Parker, but
close enough.
Judge Crater sounds like, I'm sorry, a Flintstones character.
I think there was a character on TV in the 60s called Judge Crata, but it's different. Huh. And I think it's like a big show. I don't remember what it was.
But no, I never heard of this.
But as for the Gardner, I think it'd be a hard sell because it's never been solved. But
yeah. Also, I don't know how much action was involved. They basically bluffed a guard and left.
Yeah. But took the stuff and left. So, but anyway, regardless, thanks, Bill. We always love those essays.
Yeah. Intriguing.
Next up is Dave. He said, quote, didn't the Mona Lisa get stolen from the Louvre in the 1910s? Yeah. I love me a period piece. And just as a side note, yes, it did. And it was a very interesting story indeed. There's a great book about it called The Vanished Smile, which I recommend.
It's also a good episode of Drunk History with Jack Black that sums it all up in about 7 minutes.
Yeah. Dave continues. Yeah, I found an article saying it was not until after the theft and all the publicity that occurred that it gained its status as a masterpiece. The theft of the piece was actually what propelled the work to the status it enjoys today. It became a household name due to all the publicity and the subsequent police search and investigation, which was highly criticized and led to the head of the Paris police to retire in shame. The publicity around the theft was enormous, and the search for suspects stretched so far as to include Pablo Picasso, the Kaiser of Germany, and some prominent American millionaires who were collecting art. That is, in fact, true.
Wow.
And there's actually a good reason for that.
Okay, this is way more involved than I thought it was. That's cool.
I want to say, was it his friend Apollinaire? They actually used to steal small things from the Louvre that were things they thought nobody would notice, so there actually was a reason to suspect Pablo Picasso.
Oh, jeez.
Dave continues. The great gold coin theft of 1888 at the Japanese Ministry of Finance. While the Meiji government was busy modernizing the nation's banking system, a thief named Tokichi Kumazaka, often called the Arsene Lupin of Japan, managed to infiltrate the ministry. He stole 2,000 gold coins, an astronomical sum at the time, by exploiting gaps in the new Western-style security measures that the staff hadn't fully mastered yet, end quote. Wow. We always get interesting stuff from Dave. Thanks.
Yeah, cool.
Matt Reisman takes us a lot further back. Quote, when Italian merchants, monks, and mercenaries stole St. Nicholas' bones from Myrna, Turkey in 1087, end quote.
Oh, wow.
I know, I was in 1089 and they kept me up all night.
Hey,
that would be a really cool period film. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah.
Steve Kellner sent, quote, not a single crime, but an interesting crime versus detective story. Sir Isaac Newton worked for the Royal Mint for a time and tracked down the most notorious counterfeiter of the time, a guy who bragged about his successes, and brought him to justice. Absolutely true, but doesn't it sound bonkers, end quote. Yes, it does.
God, Isaac Newton, money cop.
Sure, Secret Service, and I'd watch that. Sure, thanks, Steve.
Isaac, you're out of control. Give me your badge and your gun.
Newton!
Newton, turn in your wig.
Dan Schaefer gave us, quote, I'm not sure there's been a non-documentary movie about the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum robbery, end quote. No, I think there won't be until they catch the nefarious crooks. Thanks, Dan. Ed Shields offered, quote, the MOVE massacre in Philadelphia in 1985.
Oh, God.
On May 13th, 1985, Philadelphia police dropped a satchel bomb containing C4 explosives on a row house on Osage Avenue occupied by MOVE, a black liberation organization. MOVE members shot at Philadelphia police who had come to evict them from the house they were using as their headquarters. The attack aimed to destroy a fortified bunker on the roof, but ignited a fire that was allowed to burn, causing massive devastation. For 90 minutes, the Philadelphia Police Department allowed the resulting fire to burn out of control, destroying 61 previously evacuated neighboring houses over two city blocks and leaving 250 people homeless. Six adults and five children were killed in the attack. Two occupants of the house, one adult and one child survived, end quote. Wow. I love it when you folks educate us. Thanks, Ed.
Yeah, no, I knew that I was in Philadelphia when that happened.
Yeah. Charles Forsyth was next with, quote, I thought of two good ones, the 1972 United California bank robbery and the kidnapping of Frank Sinatra Jr.
Oh, God, that's right. I forgot he got kidnapped.
But then I checked and both incidents were depicted in films, both dramas and documentaries. Luckily, Weasel, his wife, found one. Mm-hmm. In 1967, some guys drove onto a U.S. military base in West Berlin, loaded a 9-foot missile onto a handcart, shoved it into a Mercedes sedan, they had to break the window, and drove it home. There, they dismantled it and mailed the parts to Russia. This wacky operation was orchestrated by a young KGB officer in East Berlin named Vladimir Putin, end quote.
Oh, my God.
I just wonder if he was naked on a horse at the time.
That definitely deserves a
Thanks,
movie.
Thanks, Charles.
Wow.
Yeah. Brian Mundo, wait, he doesn't? Well, he wrote, quote, I was really trying to work Fifth Element into this, but I think you finally got me. Also, when I asked Joe if he had any ideas, he said, the 15 bodies in my basement. So there's that instead.
End quote. What?
Joe is his brother, and ha ha ha, let's hope he's kidding. But this wasn't done. Byron Ho responded to Brian, quote, you could say the real crime is that the Fifth Element didn't win an Oscar, end quote. Brian, being thrilled, said, quote, so smart and such a crime, end quote. So somehow he answers Fifth Element after
he
all.
He did manage to work it in. Nicely convoluted there, boy. Nicely convoluted.
Thanks, Brian and Byron. Richard Tatum snuck in at the last minute with a simple Epstein. Well, there's still time for that.
So, yeah.
Thanks, Richard. Well, it seems that someone spilled celery juice on the tape from our hotline. That's a deeper. That someone was Max, so we don't have the recording.
This is why I am wearing the hat of shame. You can't tell, but it's very heavy, very uncomfortable, and the sequins keep falling off and getting in my beard.
Stop tap dancing. So we don't have the recording of Doris Hempelmeyer's lovely voice, but luckily...
Oh, God! Sorry. It's just it's a loss, man.
Don't say we have a loss yet. I haven't read what we have next. Luckily, Max saved the Google transcript, which I'm sure will be nearly as good.
Oh, yeah. It's incredibly accurate.
So let me read it verbatim and see if we can figure it out.
Sure.
Doris said, sort of, quote... Mm-hmm. Hello, Max Mike Movies. I'm Max. This is Dor of Simple Maya. He didn't answer Paul's question, which just happened to be what real-world crime has never gotten a movie but the Zoivs one. Well, that was an interesting question that I actually had to go do some research for because I couldn't think of one off the top of my head, and she's one for you I thought was kind of interesting. How about the Frank Sinatra Jr. kidnapping?
Oh, there we go.
So apparently back in 1963, these kids decided that they wanted to make some money, and the best way to make some money was to kidnap the son of Frank Sinatra, so they did and got caught. And you know, if you want a period movie, I mean, this might be kind of slick. That is what I'm thinking. If you want somebody who's just, oh my goodness, a bad you-know-what, she made lots of crimes, I found that this person named Chen Shishi was a Chinese prostitute, and apparently she had 800 ships. I don't know, that's what it says. She had 800 ships and 1,000 other vessels with 70,000 member pirate crew. Boy, that would be a story, huh? Anyway, those are my answers. I hope you guys have a great week, and I'll see you later. Next, bye. End quote. Just okay. So you know, Google transcript does not do punctuation.
No, and it doesn't handle names very well.
So apparently the Frank Sinatra Jr. kidnapping gets 2 votes, as does Isabella Stewart Gardner. Can you make head or tails out of that other thing?
Yes, she's talking. I actually know this character. I looked her up a long time ago. She's fascinating. Her full name I can never remember. It's like Yangtze Zhao.
It's but Chen Shishi, it says
she's,
so.
She's also called Ching Shi, and she is arguably the most successful pirate in the history of the world.
Oh.
Beginning of the 19th century, around 1805, she was a prostitute. She married a pirate captain. He was killed. She took over the fleet, and she kept building it up and building up until she had, at one point, almost 1,200 ships and 70,000 pirates working for her. And nobody could stop her. I'm sorry, I'm a big geek for Qin Shi because she is just fascinating. The East India Company in England, you know, the first global corporation, she kept robbing their ships, and they sent the entire British Navy after her, and they couldn't catch her or stop her. There isn't a lot of documentation of this, and the company denied it 50 years later. They basically said to her, hi, please stop sinking our ships. We will pay you not to kill us. And she's like, wait a sec, you're going to pay me not to steal? Okay. And they paid her like this massive tribute in gold every year to keep her from robbing the ships. Finally, the Portuguese Navy were the ones who cornered her because, I'm sorry, China. China was never really known as being a great sailing nation. So the Navy wasn't that impressive. But she eventually retired. She basically said, hi, okay, I'll stop. I give up. Give me amnesty. Give my whole crew amnesty. Let me just keep, 20 or 30 of my ships and a whole lot of money, and I won't be a pirate anymore. They're like, okay. It's not like we have any lot of choice. And she opened up a big casino and lived about 40 more years. died surrounded by her grandchildren.
Well, now we don't need a movie because we have that.
Yep, we have that. Thank you, Doris. I knew you'd be into something cool.
Speaking of one long sentence. But how about you, Max? Who is your... No. God, not more.
No, I just got to add, there have been movies about her, but just none in this country.
Okay.
See, I wanted to use my favorite crime is still the Great Canadian Maple Syrup Heist.
What?
Canada, as you know, has a strategic reserve in Quebec of maple syrup. But everyone knows that.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, that reserve is almost 80% of the global maple syrup supply. Okay. You understand how significant this is. And back in like 2011, 2012, because it was done over a period of time, these thieves siphoned off 3,000 tons of maple syrup.
Okay.
Yeah. They were eventually caught. But I would like to use that, but I found out not that long ago, somebody did a movie about it.
So that entire long thing isn't valid because it's already been made into a movie.
Yes, but I just love the story, and I'm so fascinating when I tell it, aren't I?
No.
Oh. Okay, my real ones are...
Oh God, there's more.
Yep, the English serial killers, Burke and Hare. 19th century, they killed like 30 people because they were grave robbers. They sold the bodies to medical schools, and they realized, you know what? We're running out of fresh bodies. Let's just make our own.
Okay.
So I'd like to see a movie about them that isn't just a gross-out horror movie.
Wasn't it called Young Frankenstein?
No, it was not.
Oh, okay. I thought it was.
Not that it matters, but what about you, Mike?
It matters. I'm hosting this week, remember?
Oh, right.
Apparently he forgot. There was a Dutch person named Han van Meegeren. And in and around the World War II era, Han van Meegeren, who is an artist that other people didn't care for, decided, well, I'll show you all. I'll start faking Vermeers, which he did. They're not very good, but he was smart in that there was a lot of interest in Vermeer at the time and a lot of, you know, so-called experts. And they theorized that while they hadn't found them yet, there should be certain Vermeers out there. So what van Meegeren did was he made those. Well, one of his fans was Hermann Göring, because there was big contest going on between who could have better art, Hitler or Hermann Göring. Guess who did? Well, he found out about one of these new Vermeers and hot-tailed it over to... I don't know. He hightailed it. That's what I wanted. Hightailed it over to Amsterdam and bought the Vermeer and put it in his collection. Well, van Meegeren, who had been selling these during this occupation, was doing very well for himself while the rest of Holland, which they wasn't. And after the war, suddenly everyone was like, hey, you know this van Meegeren guy? He's been working with the Nazis this whole time. We should get him. So they got him, and he was like, oh, okay, you caught me. But see, they weren't real Vermeers. I painted them. And they go, ha, 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 now you are lying. And I said, no, I really did them. Nope, off to jail you go. And he had to actually paint one in jail to prove.
No, I'm a fraud.
And then he like, well, see, I didn't sell it to Göring. I was just doing it to make the Nazis look stupid. So I'm a folk hero now. And it worked.
Wow.
So,
okay, that'd make a good movie.
Yeah, I would like to see a movie about that. But we had some really thought-provoking answers this week, so thank you. So how about taking your talents and using them to answer this? What is the most ludicrous plot you have ever seen in a movie? What is your ultimate I call no way film? Let us know.
Wait. When you say plot, do you mean criminal plot, or do you mean the plot of the story?
Plot at all. Story.
Oh, okay.
Yep, just story. A film that just begs you to believe it, and you go, no. So, let us know, and we'll tell you how at the end of the show, but let's get back to sneakers and...
The facts.
Budget, $23 million. I wonder who got most of that. Take a surprising $105 million, yet we didn't even get a pair of sneakers. So that building where we start the movie, where young Robert Redford and young Ben Kingsley are trying to steal from the rich and give to the poor, did it feel familiar? It should. It's the famous Save the Clock Tower from Back to the Future.
Oh, God. Yep. All right.
Yep. So those slides being shown over the face of the lecturing mathematician Janik looks like gobbledygook, right? It wasn't. It was actual code and formulae written by the movie's consultant, Len Alderman, famous for being one of the mathematicians who invented RSA, a crypto system for tracking and moving currency.
I knew that.
One might wonder what River Phoenix is doing here. Seems his previous role in Gus Van Sant's movie My Own Private Idaho was really rough on him, and he wanted something that was less challenging. I think he got his wish. Oops. There's more than one reference to famous phone freaker Cap'n Crunch in this movie and the opening of the show, as he found that tone by using a whistle that was given away in said serial that bypassed the activation and payphone so you could make free calls. So that's what that's all about.
Yeah, by the way, you got that wrong. It's not 2400, it's 2600 hertz. Thank you very much. Ruined the entire episode.
No, that's the magazine you've heard of.
This is the real one.
This is the real one. You're not into the deep, dark net as much as you think you are, Max. It's 24.
That's like why the aliens are actually in Hangar 20.
Yeah, it's like that. If not for the swearing in the script, this movie would have been rated G, which likely would have tanked it. Hey, did Robert Redford's jacket look familiar? Yeah, he wore that in The Natural.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of things repeating, Robert Redford's character in 3 Days of the Condor, see our entire episode on 3 Days of the Condor, also eluded capture by going out to get food, just like he did at the beginning of this movie. So the moral of the story is, whenever you're doing thing bad, make sure you're the guy who goes out to get the pizza.
Yep.
There's a lot of actual high-tech equipment in this movie, as well as one very obviously low-tech one. Did you catch that Robert Redford's character was using a pocket fisherman when hiding above Ben Kingsley's office?
Yes, yes, I did. Thank you, Ron Popeil.
Yeah. Usually they use fake phone numbers in movies for obvious reasons, and you can always tell because they start with 555. This movie doesn't. The phone number given to River Phoenix's character at the end of the film was not only real, but had an answering machine attached to it that promoted the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Hire him and they will come. Seems the first step in getting such an illustrious cast was to hire Robert Redford. After they did that, getting the rest was easy. When the studio released the press kit for this movie, they included a floppy disk, remember those? Which had encoded bits on it. And likely so much more. Max, you got anything before I try to boil this thing down?
There's stuff, but it works mostly into the plot.
Speaking of which, let's get to that. It's 1969, and buddies Martin and Cosmo are trying to sneak into major bank accounts using these here newfangled computer things so they can take money from people they don't like and give it to people they do like. But the cops are onto them. Martin barely escapes as he's gone out to get pizza. Cosmo is caught and sent to jail where he dies. We skip ahead to 1991, or 92, and Martin has a new team of buddies who are hired to test the security on major banks, breaking into them, then reporting to said banks where they really need to shore things up. Enter two mysterious NSA agents who really want to hire Martin and crew to steal a black box from some smarty pants guy named Janik. It's thought he might have broken some major encryption. The NSA wants the box before anyone else can get their hands on it. Martin don't want to, but see, the NSA knows who he really is. Well, if he won't cooperate, they'll just have to take him in for that crime he escaped in 1969. Statute of limitations, anyone? Martin and team agree, and wowie zowie, they get the box. But before they can get paid, Janik turns up dead, and the NSA agents seem not to be NSA agents. Martin and crew realize they've been duped by someone else. They are quick. They realize their only way out of this is to steal the box back from the bad guys and use it as a bargaining chip with the real NSA. There's hacking, phishing, and sneaking in this early 90s caper romp. Come along with us, won't you? And remember, there will be spoilers.
The film.
In fact, before we go any further, I will play the klaxon. Klaxon?
Spoiler. 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 Spoiler.
Clacks off. Know each other too well. So, Max, did you see this when it came out?
I did. I saw it in the theater.
Yeah, me too. Do you remember if you liked it at the time?
I thought it was fun. I was still in some of the early days of my computer knowledge, so I thought it was incredibly believable.
So you were still reading the wrong magazine, 2600, when you didn't even know about 2400.
Right. Yep. And Manny Goldstein,
Was that the frequency for the modem? No, what was 2600? What did it refer to?
2600 was the frequency from The Ring out of the Captain Crunch series.
Oh, it was. Oh, okay.
That's the one that would, just by sheer coincidence, overrode the coin operations on AT&T payphones.
Anyway.
Doesn't work anymore, folks.
Well, good luck finding a payphone.
Oh, yes. Payphones were these boxes.
Yeah, no, anyway, we're not doing that. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw it too in the theater, and I remember thinking it was pretty fun. We'll have to see if that holds up. So we have a cast, and it's, oh dear, it's a large, really interesting cast.
Yeah, yeah.
We start off with old Robbie Redford himself.
That's right, Captain Weatherface.
He does get a little haggard, I guess, as he gets older, yes, which is fine.
But he's still beautiful. It's really annoying.
I guess. What did you think of him in this?
I thought he was okay. I just felt a little surface, quite honestly. It's a thing with a lot of the characters in this, because I think there are so many.
That's part of it.
We don't get to know them a lot, but I kind of liked the sense that he's still the kid who hasn't quite grown up.
Okay. I would just say that if you like Robert Redford, this is not a role that I would stand in line for. It's okay. He's fine.
It's not one of his most interesting, certainly.
Dan Aykroyd. He is my favorite character.
We would pair with Robert Redford, yeah.
Well, I would, but it's like he's, I think, my favorite character in the movie.
He is a lot of fun. We're coming to mind later, but yeah.
Well, he's doing the whole conspiracy theory thing, and he's
yep.
one of those people that you realize probably does know a lot of things, and so you actually listen to him and you realize that what he's saying doesn't make any sense, but you still listen to him. So, yeah, I think Dan Aykroyd's actually fun. I enjoyed Dan Aykroyd in this. Sidney Poitier. What's the word I want? What's the word? I think the word I want is wasted. That's the word I want.
Why is he in this movie? I don't understand. This requires nothing of him.
No.
And when you've got Sidney Poitier, you don't have him just, hello, I'm just slightly annoyed at all times.
What the hell was that? I have to say,
that was my flawless Sidney Poitier.
Wow. Okay, I want to say that for what little he was given to do, I still think he did a good job. It was just so minor and so beneath him that it's like, why? We're wasting you. This is just sad. This is kind of sad. Yeah. We have two kids who are playing the young... I will say the young guy who was playing young Robert Redford looked a lot like Robert Redford.
Really did. It was
the
kind
cheesy
of
mustache. Yeah. Then we have David Strathairn, I'm guessing. Strathairn is Whistler.
You know him from everything. Yeah. He has been in lots and lots of movies. Whistler is my favorite character, except for the fact that David Strathairn does not know how to do blind person body language.
Well, especially he can't figure out what he wants to do with his eyes. They keep, like, sometimes they're crossed, sometimes they're looking up, sometimes they're woggling around.
Well, that does happen in some cases, but...
But he didn't pick one.
No, he couldn't choose, really. Yeah. But I liked Whistler. He's like, you could tell, in this own little world. He's just having fun so much of the time. We get very little of him.
Yeah, and then we have River Phoenix, and I have to ask the same question. What is he doing here?
Why is he here?
Because what a waste.
He has nothing to do. Nothing.
No. He's the kid.
Yeah.
And he could have literally been anybody. It wouldn't really matter.
Yeah. You could have gotten any young actor. It would have worked.
Timothy Busfield as the apparently well-named Dick Gordon.
Yep. Yep.
He was the red-haired fake NSA agent, right?
Yeah. He and Eddie Jones as Buddy Wallace do a nice sort of good cop, bad cop thing. Or
sure.
I guess sleazy cop, bad cop.
And Eddie Jones has been in everything. As
yes,
with Dathan Strathairn. So, yeah, apparently Timothy Busfield is, my sister pointed out, somewhat problematic these days.
He's been accused. He hasn't been convicted of anything, but
yeah. I think that his name being Dick is perfect, but for the role. Mary McDonnell is Liz. I know her best as the wife of the president in AID4.
Also as Stands with a Fist and Dances with Wolves.
I saw it when it came out. I haven't seen it since then. So she played a Native American person?
No, she's supposed to be white, who was a white woman who was adopted.
Okay, good. Okay. Don't like that sort of thing.
No, that's the thing about that movie. All the Native American people in it were played by Native American actors.
That's what I thought. So, yeah. Quite honestly, that's kind of it, except for James Earl Jones. And we have to ask that question once again. Yeah. What is he doing here?
Because they needed a cool voice. The one I still don't get why he's there. Ben friggin' Kingsley.
Sorry, I don't know how I passed over him. Yeah.
We'll come back to this, but there is a lot of the dialogue that if it wasn't being delivered by Ben Kingsley, would have sounded really dumb.
My note on Kingsley, though, was Ben Kingsley's accent is all over the place.
I don't know where he's supposed to be from.
It depends on which sentence he's saying, because sometimes he's from Brooklyn, sometimes he's from the Midwest.
Yeah, sometimes he's from Boston. It's not consistent. You don't know.
And also, I don't know about you, but I just wanted to yank that ponytail right off the back of his head.
Well, that was 1992 for you.
Yeah, I guess. But so we have a really, really illustrious cast.
Yeah.
And they're in this movie. Yes. Can we agree on that anyway?
They all appear in this movie. I think no one will argue with that.
So we start off with them in the Save the Clock Tower building.
Uh-huh.
And this movie decides it needs to do something that it really needs to not do, which most films need to not do. And that is being shot in Southern California and they have to have a snowstorm. Because I don't know about you, but that snow was almost as fake as the snow from Citizen Kane.
Yeah. Brush all the cornstarch off your boots.
Oh, it's just awful.
Yeah.
And then we have their first break-in to the bank. And I don't know about you, but we talked about this a lot in last week's episode, The Score, where it's like, wow, this stuff all feels really real and it feels legitimate and I believe it. What did you think about their tech breaking into the bank this time?
That seems a little cartoony.
I used the word magical.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of it was. I did like the touch that, they're not robbing it. These guys are white hats. They're white hat hackers, right, which is a real term. They didn't have the term in 1992, but they're pen testers, penetration testers, who tried. Yes, yes.
I'd like to be a penetration tester.
Get it out of your system. Yep. Okay, hang on. We have to take a pause here while Mike giggles and mumbles under his desk for a while. But
titular. It's a real English word. I looked it up twice.
But, that's what they do. Corporations or companies or what have you pay people. Say, hi, can you break in? Can you defeat our security? Where are the holes?
The thing that I didn't really buy was the next morning when he comes up to the bank president or whoever it is, and he gets paid, and she's basically like, yeah, you don't make much of a living, do you? And I'm like, do not underpay those people.
No, pen testers get a lot. They are incredibly expensive people, and as Mike suggests, for a good reason. You don't want them pissed at you. And then start, like, hey, by the way, anybody want to know all of the weak points in these people's security? Because it's going to take them months to fix it.
Yeah, that part I didn't buy in the, we're so poor. Because they have this giant warehouse thing in San Francisco. And I'm like, I know it's 92 and we haven't gotten really out of control yet. But I'm like, I'm going to go with no way.
Yeah,
I don't feel bad for you. The amount of money quoted in this movie, this is 92, but I was not prepared for it being so low.
Yeah,
they keep talking about, we stole hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, what is it? They're supposed to steal this super device, this magic black box, and they're getting $175,000 for it.
Big deal.
Yes.
I was like,
wow, that's each of you can pay your rent for a while, maybe.
I mean, again, I know it's over 30 years ago, but even back then, you'd think there'd be at least another zero in there.
You would hope.
Cripes, that's like nothing. And also when he goes to the bank, the whole heist thing, and he steals, what was it, $20,000?
No, it's like almost 100,000.
Even still,
Yeah. It's a little like Dr. Evil to have $1 million. Like,
and part of me is like, he's got it in the little briefcase. He's going upstairs. He knows how much he's going to be paid, which they don't think is a big amount of money. Why doesn't he just keep going?
Yeah, you have to wonder.
So we get this little thing where it's like, oh no, we can't do this alone. We have to bring in somebody from before. And they have to bring in Liz, who apparently used to be part of the gang or whatever. The setup for me between Marty and Liz just felt really stale.
It feels very forced. They have some chemistry. I thought they were actually kind of cute. Yeah. I thought they were kind of cute together.
One of my notes was they have no chemistry at all.
All right. Got to disagree there. They don't have a lot of it, and we don't get a lot of time to develop it. But
I mean, to be fair, it's Robert Redford. Yeah. So, heck, I have chemistry with Robert Redford.
Oh, come on. I have chemistry with Robert Redford.
But I just was like, this whole, we have to bring in my old girlfriend. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, otherwise, we won't have any women in this movie.
We got no women in this movie. Yeah, because apart from one or two very brief peripheral characters, there are no other women in this movie.
Well, Max, as you know, women don't know anything about technology.
Right. Just ask Admiral Grace Hopper or Lady Ada.
Well, what was a movie about the women who are actually doing all the math behind the moon shuttle?
Hidden
moon?
Figures.
Yeah,
yep.
Which was great. I'm so glad that came out. Wasn't that also a Viola Davis movie, I think?
Yes, it was. That was a terrific
Cool.
It was also a very good movie, too. And it wasn't just women. They were black women.
Yeah. So it's like, women can steal, too. Although, wait, do we want that on anyway?
The hacker world was a very, very sexist world. Was, right?
Was? I was going to say.
Yeah. I hope it's gotten a little better. I don't know. But it was very much a boys' club. Liz even calls it that.
Yeah. Well, she's not
And
wrong.
She's right. Yeah. I'm not exactly sure why she's there except to help with some of the social engineering.
I guess she's the only one who understands how to talk to people. I don't know. They don't let her be smart, which is a shame. But then we meet the mathematician, Janik. What did you think of him?
I'm like, oh, God, I know that actor. That actor always plays a goofball or a psychopath. It's like his name's some weird thing, like Donald Logue.
Donald Logue, yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought, oh, Fabio, wonderful, sensuous, buttery lobs of Fabio. He does not look like any mathematician I've ever seen. The long, flowing hair.
Yeah.
It's like you're about to do magic tricks, right? This is...
Yeah. You keep waiting for him to turn and go, mind freak.
Yeah. I just was like, why are you trying to make this sexy mathematician? I don't get it. And I'm not saying that mathematicians couldn't potentially be sexy. I just didn't understand the reason of making him look like that. It just felt cartoony and weird.
He looked weird, too. I wouldn't say he looked sexy. He just looked weird.
I didn't say he looked sexy. I said they were trying to make him look sexy.
Yeah.
This long, flowing locks. Oh, the math flows through my hair like wind. And the wind goes through all of his body.
Why do you say body like that?
I just know about his body. Then unfortunately we get this really, for me, uncomfortable scene where this Russian mathematician comes over and they're trying to make nice together, and we have our heroes peeping, and then we're watching this weird sex scene. I'm like, I don't feel comfortable.
And what gets me is, you know, Sidney Poitier is like, let me look. Like, oh, okay, you're going to make the guy, his character, crease into a perv. All right.
Yeah. I mean, I got it when it was supposed to be River Phoenix.
I assumed it was supposed to be funny. I don't know.
It was just gross. Then they do something. I don't know if this bothered you. I'm betting it did. But they have the video of things. They're trying to capture him typing in his password. And they're shooting this video. And it is video.
Yep.
From across the street. Yeah. They get the video and they're like, all right, zoom in and enhance. No. You can't do that.
Yes, you can.
No.
They could do that even in the 90s with analog video. There were computer programs that could enhance analog video, and these guys have access to a lot of computer hardware.
Did you buy it?
No, because it was too fast. They could do it, but it'd be like, okay, set for enhanced. Now we come back in 45 minutes and it'll be done.
I'm sorry. At best, a letter on that keyboard may have been a pixel. Yeah. That's it. That's just what, I mean, people used got pissed off in Blade Runner, a movie that came out 10 years before this, when he was going, move left and enhance, move left and enhance. And I'm saying, no, that's
supposed
the future.
To be in the future.
That was 2019, I think. So I'm going to go with no. The way they blow it up, the way, because it's all perfectly, it's actually clearer when they blow it up than it is when they're first looking at it. And I went, no.
I agree. I don't think it's possible the way they did it.
No.
In theory, it is possible because they were doing that, but it would have taken a lot longer. These guys are still using, you know, x86 machines.
The thing is, they didn't even need to do that. All we need to do is see the position of his fingers on the keyboard, and they could figure it out from that. We don't need to blow it up. So it was kind of pointless, but whatever.
But if you want to talk about the tech in this movie, how did you feel about the black box?
The magic box that has wires and chips?
Yep.
Well, now here's the thing. This is actually very topical because one of the things that's been in the news lately about AI is that there's a lot of people worried that AI may be able to defeat the encryption that has worked for us for so long. I'm not saying it can.
I think you're mixing things there. That's not AI. It's quantum computing.
But it's both. I've seen articles on both saying that AI and the potential quantum computing. So the idea of some mathematician coming up with an algorithm, a formula, whatever, that defeats the current level of encryption in 1992, I believe that that's a possibility. The fact that you can literally just stick a wire in this thing and it on instantly knows how to decrypt, and the way it decrypts, which is, oh, this looks like gobbledygook, I'm going to change all this into pretty colors.
That's not how decryption works. I have that in all caps in my notes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the other thing that gets me. It's not that it can just decrypt. It can also interface perfectly with any system and just go there.
Because I'm willing to bet that the computers that they were using to do air traffic control weren't the same desktop model that they had there in whatever their little clubhouse was.
Very unlikely.
Sadly, they were probably a lot older.
Yeah, they were. There are still air traffic control computers out there that use floppy disks.
Yikes.
Yeah.
I feel safe.
Yeah, don't you just.
So yeah, the tech.
Yeah, the tech is a little, you know, magiclorian.
Yeah, I figured you would have something to say about that. Something else you know about. Tell me, what did you think about the humor in this film?
Oddly out of place. It doesn't fit the rest of the tone. I mean, this is jumping ahead, especially the sequence at the end where they're doing the, here's what we want.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll come back to that.
That was just kind of silly.
Yeah.
Some of it's funny, but it doesn't fit the rest of the movie. The only thing I thought that does are the humor from Dan Aykroyd and from Whistler.
And there's this one point where Robert Redford has broken in to get the black box, and the Russian lady, nice, I guess she's Russian, I don't know, comes in, and he has to talk to her, and suddenly Robert Redford is at a loss for words.
Yeah.
So they're feeding him lines over the radio, and it is the most painful part of the movie.
It is, and it doesn't make any sense. A big part of hacking, especially at that time, was social engineering, being able to bluff people, being able to convince people, being able to talk your way through things. If this guy is this Uber hacker, he shouldn't have been that bad at improvising.
Also, it's Robert Redford.
It's Robert Redford. I mean, he could just go, check out my eyes. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why she just didn't go, well, is Dr. Janet? Who cares about Dr. Janet? Who are you? That's my flawless Russian accent.
Have him, she was Czech, actually.
Okay.
So very close, much closer.
Okay.
Have yourself scrubbed and sent to my tent.
Yeah, so the humor generally, except for, you know, like you said, Whistler, yeah. Mother. Wait. The computer and alien's name was Mother, and Dan Aykroyd wasn't in that movie, so, oh, no. I also have to say that that job they have to pull for the quote-unquote NSA, as I said, spoilers, it's not the NSA, was kind of easy. Hardly even a plot point. What did he need? He needed a cake box, balloons, and a shoe.
Yeah. Then see, that was social engineering. They figured they didn't do any tech there, except also they find an electric keypad. And
Which
killed me. Yes, because it's like, oh no, we'll never defeat that. Really? Even in 1992, kids were doing it with reprogrammed credit cards.
Well, it's like, you just broke into a bank. You can't get past a door.
And how does he do it? Literal brute force attack. He kicks it in.
Yeah.
And so nothing happens.
I have a question for you. Since the security was so low, why did they even bother hiring Martin and crew to get the box? The cleaning lady could have stolen it.
I don't know. I just they wanted. I think part of this was the fact that these fake NSA guys, they're working for Cosmo, Ben Kingsley.
But so, he died.
But he's dead. Sorry, spoiler. He's spoiler. Not dead. The guy we never saw die
off
isn't
screen.
Dead. Gasp. Yeah.
I
think it's revenge. I think because he wants to drag Robert Redford and the others just peripheral or collateral damage.
I think that even if we're going to have to grant Bishop Robert Redford's character any intelligence, since he obviously can't talk to women, I don't buy that.
Yeah.
I would have thought we got back to the warehouse. He would have said, that was really easy. Something's not right. But no, how does he figure it out? With Scrabble. Because the bad guys have named their thing something that's an anagram. And if you change it around, you get too many secrets. Okay.
Really. Of course. Because, sure, why wouldn't you do that?
I will say that things got a little bit more interesting when Marty is caught.
When he's actually being confronted by Cosmo and realizes
That, when they actually stop him in the car with his Russian buddy in the limousine, and they're in that tunnel in Los Angeles. I don't know how they got there from San Francisco, but whatever. And things start getting really weird and dicey. Suddenly we don't know. We know that the NSA guys are not NSA guys, but we don't know who is chasing them and being all cop-like and stuff. I thought, oh, this is getting interesting. Then they throw him into a trunk. But it turns out, who's behind this? The mob?
Sort of.
Did you go for that?
I didn't think it was the mob. I think...
That's what they said.
Well, he said he worked for them.
Works.
I assumed. Oh, he still works, but I assume he's playing his own game.
Okay. Good thing they don't actually show up at any point in time. So we can see the mob.
And his plan is very odd. It's like, I'm going to get rid of all secrets. I'm going to get rid of all wealth. All money is going to disappear. First of all, no, it's not, because people have been doing this for 20,000 years. It's like, oh, dollars aren't worth anything? Well, then we'll just...
Kabukis!
We will use kabukis as our new currency. Pancakes for everyone!
Yeah.
What did you think of him? The character, never mind his incredible wandering accent. But.
Oh, the Cosmo? I mean, I got him, right? He wants revenge on Martin. It makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't put this, I don't know why I didn't put this in the trivia. I thought I had that weird little glass-filled room with the big photogenic computer. Yeah, that was a real Cray.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So the thing that looked like a supercomputer actually was
a supercomputer, it's just there as office furniture. Okay.
It was there for Ben Kingsley to sit on.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, there are worse fates.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he was fine. Part of me was just like, yeah, okay, the mob, sure. I don't know why they have an office in a toy company, but all right. Mm-hmm. I guess they were, whatever. So he was fine. What did you think of him? I mean, it's a waste.
I thought he was really interesting. I thought it was a bit of a waste. And like I say, if it had been anyone but Ben Kingsley, the character wouldn't have made any sense at all. The character was just spouting cliches. And yet there's that one moment that's almost heartbreaking. They're on the roof. Redford's about to get away. Cosmo Kingsley has caught him. He's got a gun on him. And he just says, don't go. And you realize it's not that he wants to win. He wants his friend back.
Well, he did a really lousy job of that.
Yes. I mean, I don't know how he thought that could possibly have worked, but... And you notice he has no consequences. Nothing happens to him.
No. That we know of.
I'm sure he spent a lot of money trying to get a hold of this thing, and he didn't, but, you know... Yeah. So?
Before we get to our questions, we don't want to forget Ned, of course.
Yeah.
Needle Nose right. Ned Ryerson. Bing!
I know. What the hell was that way over long sequence where they are trying to socially engineer a guy because they need his voice and his ID card. They need his voice for an incredibly sophisticated voice recognition system that can't recognize words taken from different sentences and pasted together.
Yeah.
Which... Even in 1992, they were better than that.
Well, also, there's this stupid scene where, oops, his little toy dog accidentally knocks over Liz's purse, which happens to be open, and then he gets to find out that she's doing something. And it was like, wow, that was clumsy. I don't believe that at all.
No. So. That whole sequence didn't make sense. Except for one thing, I completely understand why that character is single.
Poor Ned.
Poor Ned.
He would leave the toy industry and go right into insurance. But we have to get to our series questions before we get too far into the show because it's getting late.
Right, right.
So number one, was the loot worth all the effort, assuming it actually worked?
If it actually worked, of course. I mean, that's the friggin' holy grail of hacking. A magic decoder ring that can crack any system ever, anywhere, no matter the operating system, no matter... The encryption system, everything.
Yeah, pretty much. So if it was real, yes, it was worth all the effort. And quite honestly, the effort wasn't that much of an effort. Oh no, a door. What shall I do?
Boot. Boot to the door.
Is the plan, or in this case, plans, believable?
I mean, they didn't have a lot to get through, so sure.
But they had those giant AV ducts.
Yes, they have the ducts through which you could bring an entire battalion.
Yeah. Plus that weird little airlock with the voice-activated thing, which you say. Also, to be fair, the sound quality on those little tape recorders stinks. So
yeah, shouldn't have worked.
Here we go. Does the security as depicted make sense?
No! What security?
How should I know? My head hurts.
The one guard that I was... The one woman I'm impressed with is when River Phoenix goes into the bathroom. So, can I use the bathroom? And the guard actually realizes he's been in there too long.
Right.
Because most of the time in these movies, you can go into the bathroom and, oh, didn't that guy go in there 8.5 hours ago? Oh, he must have eaten something bad. You know, nobody ever takes a look. And they have him fooled because they have mother outside dressed exactly the same. Although... Yeah. It's like Dan Aykroyd.
Sure, he's
does
a full head taller than Bella, but anything with the cape up, nobody would ever know.
Outweighs him by 70 pounds, but sure, he's wearing
so basically
a red hat.
They Ed Wooded their way through that one. Okay. Sure.
Yeah, so no, I don't think it is.
Are the guards or cops underpowered?
See previous answer.
Yeah, pretty much. What, yeah. Except for that one guy.
Yeah, that
one. Do we find ourselves rooting for the thieves?
Yeah, kind of, because they've been wronged. They're in a,
sure.
They're trying to do the right thing.
I mean, he's supposed to be sort of a Robin Hood type character, yeah, sort of, yeah. I guess. So, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, not the the greatest report card for a film in this series so far, but not strict no's either. But what also is not a strict no is us getting to the end of the show, because it's 55 minutes in and we're going to run out of tape.
The finish.
What tape?
The one you spilled celery juice on, that one.
Oh, that one, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Max.
Yes.
You saw Sneakers in 92 when it came out.
I
remember
did.
Being kind of fun. What about now?
Now, I don't know. I mean, the technology for 1992 is pretty much science fiction. The magic decoder, the thing is now, it's a little scary because if we hit Q-Day, or excuse me, when we hit Q-Day, which is the day someone has a powerful and stable enough quantum computer, which they're estimating should be sometime in the next 10 years.
Oh, good.
All public key encryption becomes useless. Not all encryption everywhere. Symmetrical stuff, the stuff banks use. And again, it's not like the internet's going to break. It just means privacy. What does that mean? But there are people who are working on solutions. They're calling them post-quantum encryption. May not be a disaster. We'll see. But yeah, the tech, mainly my thing was like when Mother goes, get me a cable and an I.O. board. What kind of cable? There are 90 different kinds of cables in computer tech. And what kind of I.O. board?
Yeah. Magic.
Really? Yeah. Give me one of the magic ones. The tech in this is, it's movie tech. It's not insanely absurd, but it's enough to make you go, eh.
Would you recommend it?
Honestly, for like a time capsule thing, yeah, I think it's interesting. It's always fun to me to see what they thought computers and computer tech could do before we got to the point we're at now. And the performances are fun for what there is. It's okay. It's not great. I'd say it's mediocre. And without this incredible cast, I think it would have disappeared. What about you? What did you think?
I thought it was borderline terrible.
Well, really.
Partially because of the cast. We have all these great people, and none of their parts were any good. Except for Dan Aykroyd. I think Dan Aykroyd is the best cast in this film. He was funny. He was doing Dan Aykroyd. He was fine. But everyone else, it's like you expect so much more because they can give so much more, and you're not letting them do it. And that ending was so dumb.
Yeah.
They go back to their warehouse clubhouse for some stupid reason, because where else would they go? And the NSA actually thought to go
the
there.
The real NSA shows up.
With James Earl Jones, which is fine. But basically Martin says, I'm not going to give you the box unless you give me this stuff. My response is, pew, pew. That's the end of that.
Oh, no, it wasn't that. It's we won't keep our mouths shut about it. We'll tell people.
Oh, you're about to.
Yeah, that's the thing. The NSA would not be above like, well, we're just going to have to dig about 5 or 6 shallow graves.
Like they had nothing to bargain with at all.
You'll end up in a cell in some country you can't pronounce.
Yeah. Like they just sit there like, well, I want 1,000,000 pounds of candy. Oh, okay, candy. It's like, why are you agreeing to these things? Like, no, the whole ending just felt so like a balloon, like
it's
slowly
very
losing
goofy.
Air.
Even the way they're doing it, they're playing it all for comedy. I mean, Whistler says, I want peace on earth, goodwill toward men. And James Earl Jones responds, we're the U.S. government. We don't do that sort of thing.
Message. Message. I just was like, the thefts felt fake. Like I didn't really feel a lot of pressure or tension in the film, really.
Yeah, and the whole thing where when he says at the end, you know, it doesn't work, it never did.
What the hell was that about? We saw it work.
He was lying. That's what my first note is, wait, yes, it did. We saw it. We know it worked, but he lied because the NSA never saw it work. They didn't actually do anything with it, so they have no evidence that it ever worked. And it turns out he broke out the magic part of it and kept it.
You mean like that last little piece of the mirror star thing in Hudson Hawk?
Yes, that somehow he snapped off with his bare hands. Yeah, I don't know.
I just was also like, why doesn't the NSA know that it works or doesn't work? They paid for it.
Yeah.
In that high-security office in some building. Yeah, it was just too much that felt unthought through. Yeah. And again, we've got a great cast, and they're given nothing to do. Really nothing to do. If they all got paid well, good for them. But quite honestly, I'd say just ignore this film. There's nothing in it that holds up. There are way better heist films out there. Heck, last week's The Score. Go see that. That was a really tight, well-written, well-directed, well-acted movie.
Too, but there are worse ones too, and if you don't believe me, go watch Hackers.
Speaking of which, I forgot to ask you, I didn't pay attention enough. Did this movie pass the Max Levine test?
Nobody said we're in.
Oh my God, it actually passed that test. All right, it gets 1 point.
It gets a point.
It goes from D plus to C minus. There you go.
Yeah. I'd give it a C plus, but.
But you know what gets a much higher grade? Our poll question.
Yes, it does. And this tell us how they can answer it, too.
And I would like to know, we would like to know, what is the most ludicrous movie plot you've ever seen? What is your ultimate I call no way film? How can you tell us? Many ways. They are legion and they are many. The first of which is to email us directly like Bill O'Lading at us@maxmikemovies.com. Send us your essays. Send us your suggestions. Remember, we got email from our Valerie Coons last week where she suggested a movie for this very series, which we'd never heard of.
Yep.
You might give us ideas for series because we always like those too, but just email us. We like to hear from you. Go to our website, maxmikemovies.com. There's a little search function, which both of us use all the time to see, have we done this
movie? Did we do this one? Yeah. Oh, what do you know? We did this, huh? Who knew?
But we have over 380 episodes and specials there for you to choose from. And maybe you don't like this series. There's probably another one you do like. And heck, we might as well start putting this out there. Episode 400 is just around the corner. 400. If anyone has any ideas,
The leading one is my suggestion, which is we broadcast for 400 hours.
Max will be doing this alone without the
pony. Without a break. Well, I do that on my own anyway, but
I'm sure no one can hear you. So MaxMikeMovies.com, leave a comment, talk to people like Vince or Cheese Boy or whoever else wants to leave comments there. Mm-hmm. We're on social media, as long as that social media is Blueski or Facebook. We're on every podcast app known to man. And of course, you can call our hotline and Max might not destroy the tape, Mrs. Nixon, but...
All the buttons are so funny colored, I forget.
There's only one button, Max.
Sometimes it looks like two.
Yeah, put your glasses on. Okay. Call us at 617-398-7266. That number again is 617-398-7266. But we are going on a little hiatus, like a hernia.
Like Manimal.
Yeah, like Manimal, still on hiatus for your pleasure. Yeah,
after 40 years.
So our next episode won't be for 3 weeks. One of us is going away, then the other of us is going away, so that it'll be a little while. But when we come back, Max, what is the next film in our series? This is a good place for a stick-up.
Mike, of course, is going to be sent up to a nice farm upstate where he can run and play with other whatever the hell he is. And
it's yet to be determined.
Yep, but don't worry. I got a line on this next movie.
Oh?
You may not know how, but I got a man. I got an inside man. And he's Denzel Washington. And he's a man who's inside. Except he isn't. He's actually the cop trying to find the inside man. And I've already confused myself. We're going to see Inside Man.
Oh, I was like, what is the name of the movie?
with Denzel Washington and Chiwetel Ejiofor, mostly because I want to hear Mike try to pronounce his name.
Nope. I'm not hosting that week. I don't have to.
And no, you can't call him Chewy like you usually do.
Oh. Well, next week I'll call Max Chewy and he'll be the inside man.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.